Hello and welcome to the second episode of the Mighty Cast. I'm your host, Nicholas Ritchie, and your expert is this guy.
I'm Christopher Young.
All right. Also known as...
I thought you said you weren't going to ask me any awkward questions. Also known as, I am known as many things, but if we want to keep this a family podcast with no parent or advisory stickers all over it, well, I better not say what I'm also known as.
The King of Awesome. The King of Awesome.
That wasn't one of the things that came to mind, to be honest.
Okay. Well, this happens when we're not really scripted well. all right, so for the second episode here, we have Chris is going to be talking to you about something, about some article. Was it an article?
Not really, no. It was an idea or a distinction, I should say, which Dave Tate set up. And he asked, this was a couple of years ago, are you a trainer or an exerciser? And to really... be someone who achieves your goals, you need to get to the stage where you're a trainer as opposed to just an exerciser. Now, what sort of got me thinking along these lines was I was just – I think I was going to get some food, probably getting some food knowing me actually. The place I was going to is near a high street gym, and there was a girl walking along, and she had an exercise mat slung over her shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I looked at this and I thought, is she going to exercise or is she just going to have a lie down at some point and have a little snooze? It does seem a little bit strange to me that people actually go and do an exercise session with something like a mat to make things more comfortable, mm-hmm. in which to do their yoga or Pilates or whatever it might be. So that's where the idea came from anyway.
Okay. And so Dave Tate was talking about this and it just kind of came back to you then? Or
yeah.
You just wanted
yeah,
to make this point of it? Or
yeah. Okay. Yeah. I think it's something that needs to be said again, Nick.
Okay.
It needs to be put out there on the Mighty Cast number 2.
Awesome. Well, I haven't read any articles or talked to you about this yet, so I'm just – I don't know what I'm talking about this episode, but – Chris does, of course. So why don't you tell us a little bit about, your observations. What do people take with them to exercise? What does that what does that point out to you?
Well, as you know, Nick, from your time at Dark Side Barbell, actually, we're thinking of changing the name of it because there's a couple of Dark Side Barbells, and because I've got my wild animals
British
running
people. It's Dark Side.
We're still going to call it Dark Side, but it's Dark Side Dog Pound. What do you think?
Dark Side what?
Dog Pound.
Dog Pound.
Yeah.
So you keep the dogs there. Well, you do have dogs. And
and we lift weight. But the Dog Pound would be LB, you see, for pound.
Ooh, the Dark Side Dog LB.
Yeah.
Blue. Cool.
Yeah, clever.
Yeah.
Anyway, back down.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I'll think about it.
Anyway, back on subject. At Dark Side, we keep all our stuff there. But if I have to go to train at another gym once in a while, I'll make sure I have my big, thick belt slung over my shoulder. And, sometimes I'd have to take a little pot of chalk in and use it surreptitiously because obviously it's just too much for the poor people who work in this gym to see any chalk about and have to clean it up. But... a lot of people complain to me about, oh, I can't deadlift because I can't use chalk. Well, yeah, I'm going to take my chalk in, try to stop me. Yeah. So that's what powerlifters will take into a gym. They're going there. They know they're going to work. If they don't have their big, thick powerlifting belt, it's going to, they'll get crushed. So
yeah.
You put your belt on, you got your chalk on, and that's what they're going to be using. Someone who's exercising in a more cardiovascular fashion, so a good runner or cyclist or whatever, they'll probably have an iPod, which is fair enough, as we all probably do in a commercial gym. Mm-hmm. They'll take a towel with them, and they're prepared to work. They're going there to get a sweat up. The exercise mat thing, you know, are they actually going to go and do some work, or are they just going to go and have a little snooze?
When I've used a mat, it turns into a pool that then, you know, expands into a lake, and you end up getting these extra districts. Anyway, continue. Lake District of the gym.
Yes, absolutely.
The Isle of Nick.
Oh, dear. But that got me thinking as to what people gravitate to. I just thought about the different types of exercises that people do, more modalities of exercise, I should call them. And with those modalities of exercise, what type of people will do them? So if I say to you, Nick, do you think a trainer or an exerciser will go and do a stretching class? So a Pilates class?
Exerciser.
Yeah, it's quite obvious. So the people who go to that, they're probably mostly concerned with
being toned,
maybe socializing, yeah,
fit and toned.
Well, you see, that's just a watered down. It's still goal orientated. If someone says they want to be fit and toned, it's very nebulous.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still some sort of idea there. The whole, from what I've seen, the people who go to, say, Pilates classes, they think, yes, they're working their muscles, but I think really they know they're not really working them that hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a better than nothing, they're an exerciser. Therefore, they're there mainly for health reasons and not really to change their physique or strength levels in any serious degree.
Yeah, they're going there to exercise or to get a workout, and then they can check that off their list. I exercised, and that's not as specific maybe. Is that part of this? It's not as specific as training?
Yeah, absolutely. And that sort of moves nicely into sort of, again, in a class-type situation, more of a high-energy class. And I would assert that high-energy classes will attract both. They'll attract the exerciser, but they'll also attract the trainer. I would say that if we take a class modality, say, like spinning, for example, that type of class is undoubtedly going to give someone a good cardiovascular workout. How it transfers to actually being as a cyclist on the road is debatable, but it's definitely going to give them a good cardiovascular workout. So if someone has the goal of maybe bringing their blood pressure down by 20 points, or mm-hmm. or reducing their resting heart rate figure, then That's a fair enough action to take in order to achieve that sort of goal. And obviously, you still get the exerciser types there who have this nebulous idea of fitness.
Okay, now spinning. I just want to be clear on this, because I've heard spinning a lot before. People going to their spinning classes, but that's basically stationary biking. So you're on a bike that doesn't go anywhere. And you do different variations, kind of like an aerobics class, but like for bikes.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. You got it, Nick. It's essentially the human version of the hamster wheel.
Yeah. Okay. I was thinking hamster wheel, but the thing is, you're not in anyway. Yeah. So aerobics class for bikes.
Yeah. You see, if you're actually inside a wheel, it would probably be against someone's human rights. So they put the wheels on underneath you. I guess.
They sign the paperwork, and anyway, that gets complicated.
Yeah.
But,
exactly.
So, let's see, we've talked about stretching, high energy classes. Shall we talk about the gym a bit?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, obviously, in our gym, cardio doesn't really happen. Cardio is a high rep set.
So benching for 1,000 is considered cardio.
Well, I was going to say,
maybe if, something like Chad Waterbury might prescribe for optimal neural functioning or something.
Yeah, something along those lines, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, but if someone comes to Dark Side, whether it's Dark Side Barbara or Dark Side Dog Pound, whatever we're going to call it, yeah, if they say, oh, can I do some cardio? I'll say, yeah, sure. There's a kettlebell. Swing it for 50 reps a side. You know, that's our idea of cardio. So if someone goes to a gym and gravitates towards the cardio machines, they're probably an exerciser. If they're so they're doing it for health. If they're actually if they are a trainer, if they do have specific goals and they're on there, then really for the vast majority of goals, they're not going to be on there that long. So maybe in our outline, Nick, I might have been slightly unfair that I haven't put exercise to slash trainer there, because there are some people who will train specifically, have goals, and those machines work. So at the moment, for example, there's a chap at the gym I work at who comes in, and he'll do his marathon running training on one of our treadmills. If it's frozen outside or whatever, he prefers doing his running on the treadmill. He can plug in, he can watch films on his iPod, he can do all sorts of stuff, but he's still, you know, good on him. He's on there for 2 hours running, 16, 17 miles, and he's addressing his goal. But most people, they're on the cardio machines because they're there for health. Or if they're not, if they're on the cardio machines because they're trying to change the shape of their body, then in my opinion, they're for the most part slightly misguided.
Yeah, they don't know the quickest way to their goals, most likely.
Yeah,
exactly. Or they don't want to work that hard. I've known some people that just don't want to work that hard as well.
So. Oh, absolutely, absolutely, and they're exercises, Nick.
Yeah.
Yeah. The whole idea of really putting in the effort and having their behaviours in line with their goals is so painful to them that they have then, whether they've actually changed their written down goal or not, but they have actually at that point changed their goal to, okay, well, I'll just be healthy. I don't mind. I'll be a size 18 to 20, or whatever it is. I'll give up on my goal of being a size 10 because it's just too much hard work. And to be honest, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
It's when people who, you know, it's when the behaviors and goals aren't in line that we have problems.
I think the problem is people take failure a little bit too seriously. I mean, I've been doing the whole exercise, well, I guess only weight loss game for about 5 or 6 years now, and finally I found out kind of what works really well. But you just got to fail your way to success, kind of. You know, you try it out. If it doesn't work, you try something else. But most people, they just don't have the – it doesn't matter. Maybe it just doesn't matter that much. Maybe I'm just too damn serious. But you know, you try something out and you go, oh, that didn't work. Let's try something else. And other people, they're just like, well, at least I'll get to the gym a few times a week and go on the bike for an hour. I just wouldn't like to spend my life that way, getting these very, very mediocre results for a lot of time invested. But then again, people have coupons and stuff too. And, you know, for like 5 cent discounts. And you're like, really? It's just not a good way to spend your time.
Yeah. Yeah. So. No, I totally agree with you, mate. But, I suppose if someone isn't, and this is us typically going off on a tangent here,
yes.
But I suppose if someone isn't managing to address their primary goal in the gym, then they can fall back on secondary goals and say, well, you know, okay, I haven't lost those 20 pounds or whatever it is, but I am a lot fitter and I am a bit stronger and I do feel a bit better, and that makes it all worth it.
Okay. Well, that's kind of a nice segue back into this then. So, like, would a trainer then, you'd say, probably has a primary goal when they're going to the gym and an exerciser doesn't? Or is there some different distinction between
them? Yeah. Yeah. The trainer is there to achieve their goals. And obviously, there's a sliding scale of trainers and exercisers. There's a lovely lady I work with who... she's sort of on that line between the two, and she works really hard, but she works really hard in a general way. So she'll do this type of class or that type of class, and she'll do a little bit of what I call fairly rubbishy gym work, you know. Mm-hmm. So her idea of weight training is doing some curls and tricep extensions, which are fine if you're training four times a week and covering all the other bases.
Yeah.
But she really works hard, and she's fit, and she's stronger than the average woman her age, and but she is on that line between exerciser and trainer. She kind of has some goals, but really it's about keeping healthy, keeping herself in check, so that the calories in, calories out equation doesn't get too slanted in the wrong direction.
Okay, so she basically has the work ethic, but she just doesn't have the trainer mentality?
Yes, well put, absolutely. Okay. Whereas, obviously, on the trainer side, you have people who, you could say that they are trainers, but they might be training for a 10-kilometer fun run.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're still coming in, and week one they'll do 5K, and week two they'll do 6, and week three they'll do 7, and they reach their goal. That is a trainer. But these people who have goals such as that, they tend to drift between trainer and exerciser. Normally, once the fun runs out of the way, they'll drift back to being an exerciser.
Yeah.
And then you have idiots like us who do we have an overall goal, but every session we go to,
yep,
we'll have sort of levels of we'll have, okay, if it's a good day, I want to hit this on my deadlift. If it's this is acceptable, anything under that isn't acceptable. And some of us will be really hard on ourselves and say, well, if I don't get that, then there's a default of I have to do 5 sets of 10 afterwards or something like that. Make ourselves suffer just to make sure we give it a good effort.
Well, you're the one that makes yourself suffer more than you need to, and I think it leads to a little bit of overtraining sometimes.
I'll freely admit, I think I'm over the top on the bell curve on that one. Yeah.
Yeah, because I did the same thing, and I do believe when we first started, you're like, Nick, you need to do less. I was like, no way in hell. But now I'm like, Chris, you need to do less. So I've moved from the over the bell curve to, you know, a little bit under it. So
yeah, it's funny how these things come around, don't they? Now you're telling me, yeah. But you're absolutely right. You know, sometimes, and it is the trainer mentality.
Yeah.
That someone who is really goal orientated, sometimes it does take someone to say, hey, look, you know, cut back a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I think the really, you know, strong training mentality, you know, I'm just going to go balls to the walls all the time, works really well for beginners. I mean, when I was a beginner, it worked out really, really well for strength gains, and it just made sure that I was getting efficient and I was, you know, getting a bit more volume and so forth. But in the long run, you know, I think you kind of got to check that. Because otherwise you do get overtrained, and I've had a lot of stagnation from moving and changing gyms and all that good stuff. But you know, when I was training towards the end of London there, when I kind of hit the intermediate stage, I think that was one of the reasons maybe for some of my stagnation was just training too hard, and some other times when I've really kind of gone balls to the walls. So
yes, and this sort of goes into another area which we should probably covering another podcast, sure, but it's the whole deloading thing.
Yeah.
So when you're a beginner, you're not really strong enough to be able to put a deload in there. But after a while, once you get to being an intermediate lifter, and there's many ways of deloading, but some form of deloading.
My way isn't. It shouldn't count.
What's that, sorry, Nick?
I said my way shouldn't count. The famous deloads when towards the end of the year. That I don't know what I don't even remember why that was happening, but that was interesting.
Yeah, I remember some of your deloads. You sort of went, oh, okay, today I'm gonna do the Russian bear. I think you did once, didn't you?
Yep.
You sort of did 5 cycles of the Russian bear. Is is, I think Nick actually did the modified bear, which is the hang clean, front squat, shoulder press, back squat, shoulder press behind the neck, and then back to a hang.
Yep. That one, I still do that one every now and then just for fun, and it sucks every time.
Yes.
But
it's a horrible, horrible combination of that.
Yeah. So let's get on to back onto track.
Yeah,
here.
I talked about cardio and how that maybe I'm being a bit unfair in my outline when I said it's really for exercises. There are some trainers who will use the cardio machines in the gym, but if someone is using predominantly weights machines in the gym, you're an exerciser.
Mm-hmm.
I really have a problem with weights machines. They are as close to being a waste of time as anything in a gym. As much as someone who gets on a vibration platform expecting to lose body fat or increase their muscle tone slash mass, whatever they call it.
How about for bodybuilders? I just have to contest that quickly because, like, every Korean bodybuilder here pretty much relies on nothing but machines. They might do some, like, quarter squats in, like, a free rack or some Romanian deadlifts with free weights. But, like, otherwise they're just solely on machines, which is weird, but I don't know. Maybe it's just their low body fat. I don't know.
No, that's fine, Nick. You can tend my assertions. You go for it. Now, I think here I have to say that I'm talking when I'm talking on these podcasts, I'm really talking about the majority of the people, the majority of the time.
Okay.
And I will put a percentage on the people who will get noticeable. They get noticeable results, their weights will go up, etc. But actually, in real world ability to perform a task, or increase of muscle mass, or reduction in body fat, the amount of people who are going to get a good session off weights machines is relatively low. The whole bodybuilder thing is skewed by steroid use.
Yeah.
So with bodybuilders, as long as they get some sort of blood flow into the muscles and they're eating enough food, then with anabolics they're going to get bigger. So it kind of skews that. And of course there are some people, I'm not going to say that no one has ever got big and muscular using machines. There probably is some absolute monster somewhere who did get big and muscular using machines or stronger or leaner or whatever. But I don't think it's something that the majority of people can get good results on.
Okay, so definitive answer, free weights for exercisers.
Yes.
And free weights for trainers.
That's right. Machine weights equals exerciser, and if you're serious about what you want to achieve, then you've really got to at least be bothered to go through that phase of learning the good free weight exercises. So the ones we always bang on about on GetMightyNow.com, the squats, the presses, the rows, all that sort of stuff. Obviously, Nick, the deadlift, your favourite. these are really the important one. And there's a final one in the gym that I want to talk about, a final group. And there are actually people who will go to the least populated area. So they might do some free weight exercises if all cardio kits being used, or there's a lot of people in the cardio just because they don't want to be around a bunch of lycra clad people who they perceive as being fitter, stronger, better shape, whatever than they are.
Mm-hmm.
So strange things, and obviously those people are obviously just exercisers. So they're at that stage where they find it really hard to just be in a gym. You know, it makes them feel uncomfortable. They're around people who they perceive as being a different level, and those are the people who are teetering on the edge. They might not be there much longer, unfortunately.
Yeah. There is a lot of self-conscious mental stuff going into the gym. We could probably have an episode on that too. Because
absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
I was feeling self-conscious, Chris, the other day when I was. I was doing partial deadlifts and partial benching, And I was here's the thing. I was thinking, what if these guys at the gym see me deadlifting 230 for a couple reps only above my knees? Will they think that I'm not – that I really can't deadlift that weight all the way up to my hips? I mean, that's what I was thinking. And so I was like – I was getting up there. I was like, ah, crap, I don't even want to lift this. And then I did it anyway, of course. But, I mean, it, even if you become an advanced trainer, this crap that doesn't matter, you're still going to – I mean, there's always some level of self-conscious no matter where you are. And you just got to go in and do whatever's best for you rather than what, you know, is best perceived, really. So –
yeah, no, I totally agree, Nick. And one of the there's a little story about Muscle Russell. He was training at another gym, and a guy asked him what he bench pressed at his recent competition,
mm-hmm.
and he said 190 kilos.
Yep.
And the guy said, was that with a spot? And Russell said, yeah, you know, because there's people around who are there to spot you.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, a couple of minutes later, it dawned on Russell that this guy meant that was that with a bro spot, like
a bro spot.
Your buddies are dragging the weight off you, and he actually felt so conscious of this that he sought him out and he corrected it.
Oh God.
Oh, he could just go, oh, what the hell, let it go.
Check the ego on that one. excuse me, you know that question? I just wanted to clarify that actually nobody touched the bar, because I really am that strong.
That's exactly pretty much
what you bench?
He's answered question before with probably more than you, which it's gloriously dick-like, but never mind. We'll let him off. Russell's a good guy.
Yeah, he is.
it's slightly obsessed.
Oh, and I guess I'll correct myself. Waterbury's a wonderful guy. He's the first programs I used when I was training, but yeah, some of the stuff is a little silly sometimes, and it can be misinterpreted, kind of like I did earlier. You know, he didn't recommend 1,000 reps at any point.
That's his next book, probably.
Yeah.
And yeah, just getting back to this, I also put down pool exercises, swimming, and aqua or exercise in the water classes. You can get some swimmers who are trainers, but most are exercises, and aqua enthusiasts are pretty much all exercises. It's funny, you know, Nick. I tend to get from people who swim, I often get the following argument. They say, "Oh, it's the best form of exercise. It works all your muscles." And
if you're a bad swimmer,
it works really well. That's a very good point, Nick.
Yeah. Continue.
Yes. And I tend to answer, yeah, it's fine, but when was the last time you swam down to the shops to buy a pint of milk? It's you know, it's a good type of exercise, but it shows a specific nature of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have someone who's a great swimmer and they literally glide up and down the pool, but they're not going to be fit doing anything else or able to run, cycle, lift weights, whatever, to any degree. And that it really shows the specific nature of tasks. If you can swim, doesn't mean you're going to be a good cyclist. If you can lift weights, in our case, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a good runner. Definitely not in my case. So
well, part of it's our weight, especially powerlifters. I mean, a lot of powerlifters do get very heavy by the nature of it, and that, to my understanding, that's not good for the joints, actually. You know, if you spend a lot of time, for example, jogging, you know, if you tell a powerlifter to go jogging, that's a good prescription for the hospital, I think.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's funny enough, I'm going to go on to outdoor activities as the final section of
Okay.
Popularist, shall we say, modalities of exercise. And the first one of outdoor activities is running, jogging,
walking. Could we clarify quickly for swimming and aqua? What was the difference between those again? Because I'm not really up on those.
Yeah, aqua is an exercise session in the pool. So they will stand in the pool and move forward, backwards, sideways. They'll use aqua dumbbells, which are shaped like dumbbells, but they they move them through the water. So if you imagine, they sort of get to a height in the water and then do like an alternate bench press. So pushing these big foam dumbbells forward and backwards.
Interesting.
That gives them a certain amount of concentric, so lifting only tension. There's no eccentric, obviously, in water.
Yeah.
So it's just sort of splashing around a little bit, and you know, if it pretty much based on the idea, if you try to walk through water really quickly, it's actually quite hard to do.
Yeah. Like, yeah, running on sand.
it's kind of that sort of theory. But again, it's going back to a sort of like the stretching classes. People who do aqua tend really to be more exercisers than trainers. And overall, the whole class training type of exercise really attracts those exercisers.
Okay.
There's not many people. There's the odd power lifter might do a yoga class because they're really stiff and beaten up, and they find it helps them loosen up a bit, and that's great, but that's really an anomaly. Actually, it's an anomaly to see a man in a class a lot of the time. Yeah, it's really more of a social thing, I think, a lot of the time.
Unless you're me in Korea and you're the only man in a class and they speak another language. They're not bad looking usually, but it's weird. I've done a lot of yoga here, and it's definitely weird.
Yeah. is that yoga or is that Korea? Yeah, or is it a combination of both?
It's a combination. I do enjoy the yoga, but then, like, the Korean lady's voice sometimes takes me out of that peaceful place. I'm just like, come on, I was getting into a nice stretch there. And then, you know, you hear this foreign language that sounds like ringing bells and not the good ones. You want to think Chinese bells. Anyway.
Oh, dear. Lovely. Yeah, also with outdoor activities. I was going to say, just back to running, jogging and walking, and obviously you get a whole range of people. You get people who are training for all sorts of stuff. Mm-hmm. So there's exercisers and trainers who do that. But there is a hideous injury rate amongst people who run. Walking's normally okay, but amongst people who run, it's something. I remember seeing a statistic within 6 months of taking up running, over 90% of people would have had to have stopped their training at some point or are no longer doing it because of injury.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's you know, if someone said, oh, weightlifting, you know, the percentage is 40%, you will get an injury that actually stops you from training. We all get little muscle pulls here and there.
Sure.
But I can't think, apart from my ongoing shoulder issue, which wasn't actually started by weightlifting.
That was Aikido, right?
Yeah, it was Judo, yeah, that's
Judo,
right.
Judo, okay.
Yeah. I can't actually think of a time where I missed a session because of a weightlifting-related injury. But runners are always, always just break down. It is extremely injurious.
I have a skinny, skinny friend, some good anecdotal evidence to support this, who was playing soccer, you know, during the summer and doing some sprints up the mountain. He was my neighbor at the time and doing some sprints up the mountain behind our place. And shin started bothering him, kind of didn't pay attention to it, and just kind of hoped it would go away. And now I don't think he's been doing anything on his, you know, any kind of running or anything for about 6 months now. Not because of the cold, but just because he gets pain, like, immediately. And you know, I had the same thing when I first started running when I was super obese, and then I just did walking, and that did the trick. I got thin, and I didn't have the joint pain. So,
well, you can burn a lot of calories and work pretty hard if you walk fast, and you know, especially if you can find some hills, or if you're walking on a treadmill, walk up a high gradient, that will absolutely trash you.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, myself and Marie, my fiance, we run our dogs on a local common, and Marie's she works as a physiotherapist, and we often have a little game, and we look at these people running around the common, and the game is how many weeks until they're having to go see Marie for some injury and from their running styles, and she'll wince and say, "Well, that one might as well go to hospital straight away. They're not going to last much longer."
Oh my!
It really is a case of you can just look at the way people run, and it's painful in the eye.
Yep.
I'll balance that by saying, when you see a good runner, it is really a thing of beauty. Absolute.
It's effortless. It's practically. Yes. I mean, even if they're sprinting, it's just. Oh, yeah, it is a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
Definitely a thing of beauty.
Yeah. And, some of these people, oh dear, they should not be running. And then we move on to other outdoor activities. Cycling is obviously a popular one that I had to endure last year as well. they can be exercises and trainers. One thing I say about cycling is there is some serious extra work that needs to be done for cyclists and for runners, really. But cycling especially can give you a horrible posture. It really can.
I imagine slumping, if you're, I mean, slumping, computer all day, more slumping.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And that's one of my little bugbears about the popularity of indoor cycling or spinning. Mm-hmm. You get guys, it's more popular with guys actually, spinning, surprisingly enough, probably the only type of exercise class that is more popular with guys. But they'll spend, 12 hours a day at a computer, and they'll sit in front of a TV, and they'll sit in their car, and then they'll have a couple of exercise sessions a week where they sit down on an indoor cycle and they
exercise.
they exercise, and their posture's appalling. You just look at them and say, for goodness sake, stand up at some point, you know, extend your spine a little bit, do something. But that's an aside. So cycling is and another thing about cyclists, that they have worse dress sense than bodybuilders and powerlifters. They really are appalling.
Do they do the spandex and everything? Or?
Yeah. They're normally, because they have not the best postures, it doesn't look good. Doesn't look good at all.
Well, a well-endowed woman might not be a bad thing to observe, but at the same time it might. I don't know.
Thanks for that, Nick. And the last of the outdoor activity modalities is I'll put it down as park fitness here, but there's a very popular one in very popular system of exercise in the UK at the moment called British Military Fitness.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's like the equivalent of P90X here. Maybe?
Not P90X and Insanity and stuff like that is more, you know, they'll have some aerobic sessions, and they'll have some circuit sessions, and they'll have some lifting sessions, and they'll have martial arts stuff. It okay. just seems like, you know, someone goes through...
Like CrossFit or something?
Yeah, well, they just go through every type of exercise they've ever come across, and then chuck it all in a bucket and see what comes out.
Okay,
that's really P90X. No, but British Military Fitness, in fairness to that, is actually quite well structured. So they'll put people into different groups. So I believe they do it in colours. So they sort of like have a blue group, a red group, a green group, whatever. And with these groups, the amount of time they spend on each of their exercises, which is done in a circuit, will change.
Okay.
But it's a lot of body weight stuff. So it's in the park. They'll do push-ups for 30 seconds. Then they'll run from where they are to that tree and back for 30 seconds, and then they'll do sit-ups for 30 seconds, and then they'll do something else. And that seems to be how it works. But it's very popular, and there's a couple of people who I would classify as quite goal-orientated gym goers who I know have really got into it, and they love it, and they're definitely trainers. So again, that sort of thing that really appeals to, across the board, but it's a good way of making sure, you know, for someone who lifts weights, that's an excellent way of A, getting outside, which I think is always nice, and B, getting some good extra stuff that you wouldn't normally do. So I'm quite a fan of that from what I've seen.
I remember John Berardi had a little video, I think it was John Berardi, where he was in the park and he just talked about having a park workout, you know, and I took that to heart a few times when I was traveling or something, you know, no facilities that I could find nearby or anything, and, you know, just go to the park, do some pull-ups, do some box jumps, do, you know, whatever you can, really. And,
in our book, Nick, Becoming Mighty, there we go, plugging everything, plug the website, plug the book. I talk about a good friend of mine, Mark, who, he was really tight on time. He'd go to the gym once a week and he'd go and train with the foxes, he called it. So it was sort of normally done at dusk, an old, mostly disused children's playground, and like you said, he'd be doing pull-ups and dips and monkey bars and all sorts of stuff like that. And the one gym session a week he did, he was still the strongest guy in the gym. Yeah, so it kept him at it doesn't say much for the other people in the gym, I guess, but sure. It kept him at a pretty good level. Just doing this sort of stuff, and yeah, similar to the John Berardi thing, but yeah, training with the foxes.
Yeah, something's better than nothing is what I think the moral of that story is.
Absolutely, yeah, ain't that true? Yeah. So the moral is, after all this, if you are just training for health, if you are an exerciser. And to be honest, if you're an exerciser, you're probably not listening to this podcast. But that's fine. But recognise the fact that you're an exerciser. If you're trying to bring your resting heart rate down or your blood pressure down or just stay healthy, get some blood going around the body, then that's great. But if you're goal orientated, if you want to get strong, if you want to get more muscular, if you want to lose body fat, if you want to be that mighty person who is bursting to get out of you, you need to train. There is absolutely no doubt about that. And the best way to achieve your goals, as I've said several times, is through good old fashioned hard free weight training done on a consistent basis in a progressive manner.
So hard training, heavy training, I think, is another thing, yeah. I'd like to say. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. Well, let me ask you about my training real quick here.
Okay.
So lately I just started, well, you know, I'm always moving and stuff, so I don't have a lot of time right now. So I'm only doing two sessions a week. I have an upper body and a lower body session. And so on lower body day, I'm pretty much sticking to deadlifts, and upper body, I'm doing bench press, and then I'll do a little bit of accessory work afterwards. But what I'll do is I'm doing partials because that way I can get a bit more weight on the bar consistently without overdoing it, I guess. Because if I were to train, you know, with in my two rep range for the deadlift, say every week, it would kill me. But if I'm doing partials, it leaves a little bit in the tank, and I can still get a heavy weight in my hands. So yeah. I'll deadlift just past my knees, and I'll bench press about 5 inches. It's like a one board press, or maybe two board, about 5 inches above the chest, sometimes 3 to 5 inches anyway. And I'm doing partials with those. And afterwards, I'm doing some explosive stuff. So after my deadlift, within a minute, I'll jump up onto a box several times. And for the benches, I'll do some dynamic push-ups. So I'll do a dynamic push-up after my heavy bench set, and I'll land on some boxes that are, you know, 12, 14 inches up, and go back to the floor and so forth. So, I don't know, two times a week training, what are your thoughts on that? Is that...
Yeah, it sounds... It, It sounds good. The first thing I want to say is that just in case anyone who's listening doesn't know, I live in London and Nick lives in Seoul, South Korea. So even though Nick used to live in London and train with me, unfortunately we haven't trained together for a while, everybody. So I don't actually see much of Nick's training. But training twice a week, you can make great progress doing that. The first thing that comes to mind is frequency. So obviously, if you're doing one upper body and one lower body session each week, you only get a frequency of once per week for each area of the body.
Whereas with Westside, I'd get it twice a week. So
exactly, yeah. So I would say, even though you could sort of have an emphasis on the upper body for one session and an emphasis on the lower body for another session, I would still make them whole body sessions. So the way that would work out is, let's say you're doing a session with upper body emphasis. You do your board presses, you do your face pulls, pull-ups, overhead presses, and then maybe throw in 3 to 5 sets of squats and deadlifts. Squats or deadlifts, I should say, to give your lower body some work. And they don't have to be, super hard. So Nick deadlifts around 250 kilos. So on that day, maybe a couple of sets, maybe 3 sets of deadlifts, sort of going 180, 190, 200 for sets of 5.
Okay.
And that would sort of cover it. So it's good solid work, not really pushing the envelope, but still getting that in. And on your lower body day, after you've done your rack pulls, squats, and whatever else you're doing, maybe do something like some 3 to 5 sets of curl and press or dumbbell bench press along with face pulls or pull-ups, just to sort of keep that upper body, keep some stress going through the upper body. So you're increasing your frequency, you're still really hammering upper body one day, lower body the next. So you're kind of getting the best of both worlds if you were to do that.
Okay. And having 2 full body sessions a week, I mean, I 4 times a week is pretty – it puts a lot of strain on my CNS. But twice a week, I'd be afraid if, I do go pretty heavy on the, say, the deadlift day, and then I'm benching after that, just keep kind of the benching low, and I shouldn't run into overtraining problems.
Yeah, exactly. So you're fluctuating your intensity.
Okay.
So CNS tends to take a – so CNS is central nervous system. It tends to take a real hammering, excuse me, when you're doing but when you're lifting at loads of 90, 95, 100%, or even more, you know, when Nick talks about board presses, the board press is what we call supra maximal training. That means you're using over the amount of weight you could use for a bench press. So if someone can bench press 140 kilos usually, then for a 2-board bench press, they might be up to 160 kilos. Obviously, that extra weight in your hands really overloads the central nervous system. Now, if you cut the intensity down to, say, 80%, then the loading on the nervous system is that much less. So therefore, you're not going to get that same sort of fatigue that you get when you're training 4 days a week. And with a lifter of Nick's level, if you're training 4 days a week, then I would say every fourth week should really be a deload week.
Yeah, definitely. And you got to be getting good sleep with that too, as we found out. If I don't get 9 hours after a deadlift session, even with 9 hours, I'm pretty dead. So.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? It's strange. I think that's where a lot of non-lifters and people who are lifters but don't really lift heavy, they don't really appreciate how tiring it can be.
Yeah, it's not like my muscles hurt. I mean, that might happen, but it's not really a muscle hurting thing. It's like when you get the flu. It's basically like getting the flu after every deadlift session. If I don't get a good night's sleep, the next day I'm just you're just dead. So
yes. Yeah, I'd like to apologise to my listeners if you can hear a bunch of barking. This is the a lifting session about to start. So all the people are coming round to lift, but my dogs actually think they're here for them. They're here to play ball with them. They're here to fuss them. They're here to do whatever. So, yeah, obviously, it's all about them. See, I wasn't joking when I said it's the Dark Side Dog Pound.
Yep. Actually, fitting name. Very fitting name.
Does that answer your question, Nick, about twice a week training?
Yeah, basically the usual argument of you should be doing more during your sessions seems to apply again ever since I went to not overtraining. You know, I went to the other opposite end of the spectrum. I need to bring it up a bit. So very helpful, Chris. Thanks.
Sorry, Nick. but one thing I will say, and this applies to people of a certain level and also people of a certain age, when I talk about doing three sets, five sets, or even greater, I really believe in I believe it's been reinvented, and it's called forced spectrum ramping by Christian Thibodeau on T-Nation.
Yeah.
we just call it putting the weight up every set.
Yeah.
Or using lead-in sets. And, yeah, if I say do three sets of five in the squat, normally there'd be, you'd do three sets of five at 75% intensity, 80% intensity, and then 85% intensity. So you're ramping up each set. And when I'm talking about 85% intensity, so that's 85% of what you could do for one rep in that exercise.
Let's make it a little more complicated even. when we say Sorry, five man. Sets, what we really mean is warm up until your first working set. And then from each set, with each set, you increase the weight. So if I'm going to squat, if I'm going to do working sets starting from, say, 100 kilos, or let's say 90 kilos on the squat, that'll be a really low working set, but let's say we do that. So then I might warm up with 60 kilos, and then I go 80 kilos, and I do whatever number of reps I want. And then 90 kilos, I do 5. 110, I do 5. 120, I do 5. 130, I do 5. 140, I do 5, and then I'm done. And that's five working sets.
Well, I'd actually say that's probably not quite five working sets. I'm really nasty. A working set is 80% of your top weight. Okay. That's the way I classify it. So if your top weight is 140 for five, then 80% of 140 is we'll call it 110. It's 112, but we'll call it 110. So 110 or anything over would count. So if you did, so 140 would count, 130 would count, 120 would count, 110 would count, but the set 100 wouldn't count.
Yeah.
What's that, sorry?
The 90 kilo set wouldn't count.
No, it wouldn't count. No, yep. Anything under 110 wouldn't actually count as a work set.
Yeah.
So once you hit your top weight, if you find you've only done three work sets, you then drop down to 85%. Yeah, that's right. I'd say normally around 85%. If you're the stronger you are, it will be less. So for a competitive lifter, I'd say maybe even drop it to 75% of your top weight. But for intermediate and beginner lifters, then for it to count, it really needs to be 80 or above.
Awesome. And that's 80% or above of your top working set or of your max? Top
working set, yeah. So this is not to be confused with 80% of your 1RM. So if you can squat, say Nick can squat 180 for one, then you wouldn't drop down to 80% of your 1RM because that would kill you.
Yeah.
You'd drop down to 80% of your top weight for that day.
Okay. So that's...
And this is actually this isn't my system. Well, it's kind of my take on this is what the Bulgarian lifters did back in the 80s and 90s when they were dominating Olympic weightlifting for a small country. They won an unusually high amount of medals in weightlifting. They broke the Soviet monopoly on it, and they apparently the lifter would go in and he's so highly tuned. They'd say, good morning, comrade Boevsky. how much do you feel you can snatch today? And Comrade Boevski would say, I can snatch 180 kilograms. And then they'd actually work from that estimated max. He wouldn't just say that. He'd be warming up and saying how he felt the whole time. And from that, they'd actually work on percentages from that estimated max. And it would be, okay, comrade, today you're doing 38 sets of two at 95% or whatever it is. And with Eastern European numbers, it's always something random like 38.65% or something. So, whatever it was, that's what that lifter would do. And if he didn't do it, it was back to the salt mines at Sofia or whatever.
Yeah. Well, that's just because they had a little extra time on their hands. They didn't have Excel spreadsheets back then, so, you know, it would keep the trainers busy with the extra decimal points. You're like, well, that trainer, he's got a little extra time. Let's add another decimal point.
Exactly. it was probably some mathematical
bureaucratic thing.
saying, I hate these jocks. They're going to suffer. Yeah, five sets will do it. Yeah. Sod that, you're doing 25. I just imagine every time that poor guy crawled out of the gym, the little mathematical nerd would be grinning to himself, saying, "Ha, got you again."
for some reason, your mathematical nerd here sounded to me a lot like a leprechaun that would just be dancing around for joy, you know. What Bulgarians, leprechauns, math? This is. It's time to end this show, I think.
Yeah, when we get really random and stupid, we're probably done. I know the Fitcast have their off-topic section, don't they? But I think once we get that off-topic, it's probably time to finish.
All right. Well, thanks again, Chris, and it's been a pleasure recording the second episode of the Mighty Cast with you.
And a pleasure talking to you, Nick, as well, and I hope that the listeners got something out of that.
Yeah, I think we had a few gems in there, even if they were unexpected gems of wisdom. All right, well, have a good one, and thank you for listening. This has been the Mighty Cast.